Hi, my name is Clay Boykin, and I am in search of the new compassionate male. Today, my producer, Dennis Tardon, and I had the opportunity to visit with a dear friend of mine, Chuck Robison. Chuck is the director of the Kundalini Research Foundation and has some exciting news to share. Here's that conversation.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. This is our podcast. I'm the producer, and we're here with the founder, Clay Boykin. Hi, Clay.
Hi, Dennis.
Today, our guest is Chuck Robison. Hello, Chuck. Tell me, Clay, introduce Chuck to our audience, please.
Oh, goodness. How can I introduce a gentleman who needs no introduction? Chuck and I met several years ago, and he's got a wonderful background. He's rubbed shoulders with the greats, interviewed them, gotten to know, yes, photographed them. And we got to know each other partially through a program that he has called What If It Really Works. It's a program that he's had on for 17 years. And he has some things coming up that are, us doing a podcast right now is extremely timely. And so for the next little bit, we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Good. Welcome, Chuck. Tell us about what you're doing now on the planet in 2020 at the end of July, going into August. What are you doing? And share with us about the work with Kundalini. It's been many years since I've even thought of that word. And when I had, I'd like to know more. What's going on?
Well, you're in the vast majority of people, Dennis, because people have heard about it. The most common reference to Kundalini is Kundalini yoga, and there are all these yoga centers around. There isn't Kundalini yoga, there's yoga. And the purpose of yoga is to get the Kundalini. But that's a trademark name that was trademarked in 1965. So that's how that got to be there. I have just been made the director of the Kundalini Research Foundation. And this foundation was started in 1975 by Pandit Gopikrishna and Gene Kiefer. And Gene became the director of the foundation. And in January, he decided to retire, and he chose me to replace his work in the foundation. The foundation, because of the environment we've been in, has been a little bit asleep for the last 45 years because there was no way to get enough interest and enough funding. So when I came on the scene in January, I decided that this is a perfect opportunity. The timing is just exactly right to make this go. And so the first thing I did is I called Dr. Andrew Neuberg at the University of Pennsylvania. He is the guy for doing spirit-based or meditational or religious brain studies of people who are in meditation. One of his most recent books is How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain. A prior book to that is Why God Won't Go Away. And what he has discovered in his own research so far is that we have some built-in things that we may not be aware of, but they are in action. And one of those, which he will demonstrate to all of us when we get funding for this project, is that the body is built with evolutionary triggers inside of it. And our nervous system is built with these triggers as well. And when they are accessed or triggered, then changes occur in the body that result in a higher level, at least a higher level of awareness, perhaps a Kundalini experience, and of course the ultimate, which is enlightenment. Not very many people get there, but people get up and here and here. And so, as a theologian, and I am a theologian, I was a chaplain at the United Nations for 10 years. I have my degree from Princeton. And so I think about this a lot. And one of the things that I've always been curious about and never understood until I started reading Newberg's books was the Bible says your body is the temple of God. And when I was growing up, and I'm sure you remember this too, Clay, when you heard that, they told you don't smoke cigarettes. Remember that?
Right.
and by God, this self-abuse, oh my God.
Yeah, well, that's what we heard, right?
Right.
And it was all everything, like everything else in our past in religious circles, it was all about no. Well, this is about yes. And what it means is that your body is built in from inside to facilitate a higher level of here spiritual experience. And that's what Kundalini is. One of the terms you hear in Kundalini is Kundalini rising or Kundalini awakening. It is the energy that stores in the first and second chakras, and the chakras are a new word for you. That's an energy system in the body. Right. It goes up the spinal column like this and then into the brain through two channels. The best way you could understand that is if you go to a doctor's office and look at one of his graduations or anything, mm-hmm. you'll find the caduceus, which is the two snakes wrapped right. around the mm-hmm. staff. And if you ask the doctor what that means, he said, well, I don't know. But no, that's right. Yeah. Because this goes so, it is so far back, that symbol, that in the old days, they knew more about Kundalini than we do today. And the symbol was the two snakes going up the post are symbols of the energy going up the spinal column. That's what Kundalini is visualized as. So where we are right now is that when we start this research project, which as soon as we get funded, whatever that means, and a lot of that has to do with prayer, Dennis, really. Sure. But once they do that, then we have about 24 months left to complete this, and that'll result in peer review papers and ultimately some kind of a book. But in the meantime, it's important for people to understand that this is scientific. This is stuff we can measure, we can verify. And it's not some woo. Oh, I hate that term. Woo woo.
Yes.
The reason I hate it is I've had been people telling me I was woo woo since about 1978 when I started the Course in Miracles. Actually,
yes,
yeah.
Before that, I had a rock solid Presbyterian minister image that you couldn't shake. But then they decided I was woo woo, and I don't like that. But at any rate, this isn't woo woo. This is right. going to be a scientifically verifiable situation. And I think once this happens, it's going to make some real waves because I can't say this scientifically, but I'm pretty certain this is the moment when all of this stuff is going to come out. And right. the reason I say that is when you look back to the 1300s, the bubonic plague over a period of 30 years killed one third of all Christendom. And after that, we discover that the 14th century and the 15th century open up to a brand new world. So that by the time 1517 comes along and Luther puts the theses on the door at Wittenberg, the Catholic Church was over. That was the end of that. And here's what's happening in America today. The mainline Protestant denominations and the Catholic Church have both and all lost better than 60% of it, the market share that they had 40 years ago. So this is and there's no indication that this is going away. So the people are looking for valid, sustainable, verifiable spiritual paths and disciplines that they can follow. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting about that is Kundalini, as I understand it and as we are positioning it, is the trigger for evolution. Wow. It is how evolution works. Now, I'm not talking about nobody's going to get a sixth finger, not that kind of revolution, but I'm talking about the fact that we are designed to evolve to higher levels of consciousness and communication. But it doesn't happen on Thursday at 2. It happens when somebody pulls the trigger. So I just, if you don't mind, could I read you something that Gopi Krishna wrote?
Please.
he says, the aim of this, the evolutionary process, is to create a more noble, more sober, more far-seeing, more sensitive, more compassionate, that's a good word, and more loving individual. Those who think that their practice of yoga or another spiritual discipline has come to fruition, or that their kundalini has awakened, would do well to assess their progress by critical examination of their own thoughts, acts, and behavior to know how far their evolution conforms to the standards set in the great religious scriptures of the world. One of the things he's saying is that these great scriptures of the world, all over the world, have been prized and protected and guaranteed accurate for thousands of years. And there's a reason for that. The reason is that these scriptures which have come to us are a racial statement. The race consciousness, the whoever we are in the big sky, knows how to write to us and did so thousands of years ago and said, please remember, these are the rules. And that's why we esteem and revere and keep these texts available. So Gopi Krishna goes on to say, the first signs of success are a greater regard for truth, a greater measure of self-mastery, steadfastness, altruism, the absence of envy, malice, and hate, and a greater sense of empathy with all human beings. Doesn't that sound great, Clay?
Yeah.
That's right down the line where you are.
That's right.
The climax of the practice, namely the vision of God or cosmic consciousness, can be sublime and blissful only when the personality of the seeker evolves in the right direction as a result of the change brought about in the organism, which means that your organism is going to support whatever change you're working on. Mm-hmm. But so you better be very careful that you're working on the right thing. And the best example of a kundalini experience gone wrong was Adolf Hitler.
Really?
Yes. And the best example is Jesus Christ and more. But the point is, here's what he says. The reason why all great spiritual teachers, including the founders of the major faiths, have laid greater emphasis on the cultivation of a noble qualities than on meditational techniques is obvious in light of this feat. So what he's saying is the development of character and the deepening of character and the urge to communicate with the spirit of life and yourself is what guarantees that you can actually have this kundalini experience. Mm. You know, and I can assure you can do it. Probably both of you can. You can repeat the a Boy Scout is.
Oh, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, loyal, friendly, kind, trusty, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. There. Yes.
Okay. And the Boy Scouts told us to work on those.
Right.
And they do work. That's as good a guide as any. And see, you can still repeat it, and I can yep. repeat most of them. But you were mm-hmm. a scout. I just got to the next level below that. You were an Eagle Scout. But But the point is, Dennis, this experience that people are seeking now and wanting, and in many cases claiming, is one that will be verified by what the Spirit does with you in your life.
Sure. You will be known by the fruits, right?
Yes. So I when I use that measurement on myself, I sit around and say, how can this be that I am in the position all of a sudden that I have been in since January, mm-hmm. when this organization was founded by Gopi Krishna?
Yeah.
And I got to spend an hour alone with Gopi Krishna, which is a big deal. And I was a fairly well-known portrait photographer in New York. And in that hour, I took pictures of him, which are going to, they're beginning to appear on our website. But more importantly, I got to spend time talking with him. And at the end of that discussion with him, I put on my camera and turned off my lights and took the film out, 6 rolls of film. And I said to him, Gopi Krishna, what do I need to do to be enlightened? And he looked straight at me and without even batting an eye, he said, just this. Every day, as often as you can, think about God. And God will take care of everything else. And I went through this incredible theological education at Princeton. So I know the complexity of theology. And I mean, it's not splitting hairs, it's splitting micro hairs. And it is more confusing than illuminating, frankly, for me. And I heard what he said, and I thought, wait a minute, that's something I can do. I can figure that one out. That's not too complicated for me. And so I went home and I worked in my darkroom for 3 days in the dark in my studio, getting these pictures ready. I took them. I took one of them over to him at this hotel or where he was staying, and got him to sign it for my son. So my son has a picture of Gopi Krishna with his signature on it, dedicated to my son. But the point is that I spent time in that darkroom. And I realized that I could do that. And so all of a sudden I decided, okay, this is going to be my spiritual practice. I'm going to think about God as often as I can every day. And the good news is there are no rules. You can think anything you want to. Does God support the Dallas Cowboys? And if not, who does he support? Where does he go for a drink? Does he go square dancing on Saturday night? Who are his buddies? Does he play golf? What is he doing in this situation in this country? How did we get into this incredible situation? What is he doing in this pandemic? What is God doing? Who is God? Where is he? And these are the kinds of things that I have spent the last 38 years thinking about. And what I can say for sure is that the result has been that I am having a more blissful, positive spiritual life experience than I ever dreamed possible. Go ahead, Clay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit of Gopi Krishna's background? Just a little bit.
Yeah, I certainly can. He's very interesting. Mm-hmm. He was, he grew up in the foothills of the Himalayas in Kashmir. His family was dirt poor. He grew up in a sod hut. His mother had great expectations for him, and he got through high school, which was quite an achievement of itself in those days. And this was 1904, was when he was born. And he tried and failed to get into the college entrance exam. Mm-hmm. Everybody was disappointed by that, including him. But he went to work with a government organization of some kind. I don't know. They kept paper for somebody and they shuffled, but you know that stuff, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. especially in India. But he did it. And then he decided that he was going to spend the rest of his life meditating and finding out where the meditation left us. So in doing that, he spent 17 years getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and sitting in one position without moving for 4 hours at a time and nobody told him how to do it. Nobody told him what to do, how to do it, anything. He had no guidance because he didn't know who to call. But then he got roaringly sick. And he had all sorts of physical maladies and things that lasted for 17 years. And finally, somebody who knew something came around and said to him, one of these channels is hot and one is cold, and you've got to reverse that. So they gave him milk. And milk to drink began to soothe this problem that he created. But along the way, during those 17 years, he was able to contact other gurus and spiritual leaders in India and ask them, what is this that's happening to me? And in his book, his autobiography, he says, which is called Living with Kundalini, he said, no one of all the people I consulted could tell me with certainty that they knew what was happening to me, or what was happening to me was a Kundalini experience. So finally, the situation resolved itself. And the Kundalini experience is like you or I, and one of the three of us, getting in a boat and sailing way, way, way across some big ocean. He calls it the ocean of consciousness, but a big ocean. And when you get there, it's an achievement to get there. And when you get there, they give you a souvenir to take back to prove I was there. So people that have had this super awakening Kundalini experience walk back with some kind of souvenir to prove they were there. And in Gopi Krishna's case, the souvenir was he was suddenly overnight, without exception and without question, able to write and talk and read in 9 separate languages.
Oh my.
And not only that, but he was able to write in the most incredible way. If you ever get a chance to read one of his books, and I am reading one of them someplace. Oh, this is the best one. This is wonderful. This is called Secrets of Kundalini in Panchastavi. Panchastavi is a book that was written 1,000 years ago, and somebody found it in a cave outside of where Gopi Krishna lived, and they brought it to him. And he discovered that it was in Sanskrit, and it was the journal of a man who lived 1,000 years before, and how he made his Kundalini experience happen through meditation. Oh, and Gopi Krishna read that and said, that's exactly what happened to me. So here he has a cross reference that goes back 1,000 years. What happened to him is what happened to me. I know his validation confirms mine, and my validation confirms him. So he wrote, Gene actually had this book published with the Sanskrit and everything else. And in this back part, which is Panchastavi, that's the name of it. Mm-hmm. This turns out to be a workbook for meditation to go through this process. This is magic. But on top of that, Gopi Krishna wrote a 50,000 word introduction to this book. And the thing that's great about him is he writes as clearly as you possibly could, but many of his sentences are 125 words or more.
Goodness.
And he wrote 18 books altogether. They've been published all over the world. And what's unique about him is that he knows what Kundalini is. He knows how to make it happen. And he's not looking to create a religion or a following anything. It's just, here's the way it works. Take it or leave it. Well, that's a great advertisement for me, from far as I can tell.
So what are you going to be doing tomorrow, and what do you plan to do as far as you can see by the light? You know, we can only see by the light as far as it, you know, as far as it goes. What are your ideas, what's pulling you as to what's going to be happening over the weekend and the way forward?
Well, the weekend is actually Sunday only, and because of the Zoom thing, it was going to be a 2-day event, but it's going to be one day. And it's going to be people who are educated in Kundalini talking about things. I'll be the least educated person. And by the way, I haven't had a Kundalini experience. I have some nice things that have happened to me, but I haven't I would not say I've had a kundalini experience or awakening. Many do. But what I see happening is that I was called to do this job. And I have no idea why Gene Kiefer chose me, because he constantly reminds me that Gopi Krishna constantly reminded him, Gene, you are my spiritual son. So he, Gopi Krishna and his spiritual son put this together. And all of a sudden, I've worked with Gene Kiefer for 40 years. He's my teacher. Mm-hmm. And it's as if he has said to me, you are my spiritual son. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of why I'm doing this. Dennis, I don't have the vaguest notion of what I'm doing.
That is a wonderful place to do it, because but you know the why. You know the purpose.
I know the why. Yeah,
and that's really, we don't need to know the what or the how, as long as we are very clear on the why.
Yeah. Well, that's I'm clear on the why, and the why is, this is a documented answer to where we are supposed to go spiritually. This is the path, and it has nothing to do with where you were born, what religion you were in, whether you're rich, none of that stuff. It's completely without limit. And it is, as I see it, if this pandemic that we're in the middle of is going to change things as profoundly as I think they are, a year from now, we will not believe we were where we were today. And the speed is going to be even faster as we go forward. So this, as I see it, this or things like this are going to replace what we think of as religion. And I know a little bit about religion because I've been in pulpits for 40 years, 45 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And I, after a while, you say, how come I can't tell the truth here? And the answer is, you're not allowed to tell the truth. So I got out. I said, you know what? AMF. Mm-hmm. Because it's time to tell the truth. And I know in my heart that this is the time to tell the truth. This is the moment.
And so then this that's coming up this weekend, that's happening Sunday, is this a summit meeting of Kundalini?
It's the Canadian called ICR. It's the Canadian organization, one of the organizations that's involved in Kundalini, and they have been pretty active in Gopi Krishna's material. They promote his material in Canada, and they have been supportive in arranging some of it. They have been doing this work for a long, long time. Some of the people in there have been, you know, as long as I've been in it. And they are usually have a 2-day retreat. And this year, because of the pandemic, mm-hmm. I couldn't even get into Canada.
Right.
So, they're going to do a Zoom meeting, and they're going to be 5 or 6 speakers that mm-hmm. go through this. Mm-hmm. And it's all about different aspects of Kundalini. My aspect is going to be 2 things. The research that we're doing and how we're doing it, and then how do we connect everybody?
Right.
And there, one of the things that I'm sure of about religions and churches is that you have to, if you're going to found a church or a denomination or religion, you have to be sure that it has a strong dose of the division gene in it, because the first thing that religious groups do when they get together, they split. And this kind of thing is that they will find distinct, minute ways to justify splitting of anything. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm thinking about putting together a network or a global, you know, field for Kundalini, I'm fully aware that there are going to be people who say, well, that's not right. That's not right. But the bottom line is, at least we're focused in that direction. And the possibility is that a majority of people will connect with this.
Yeah.
Because people are, you be patient with me for just a second while I try mm-hmm. to say this.
Sure.
Take your time.
But it's a very difficult thing to stand in a pulpit draped in a gown and wishing you were be a spiritual leader and be limited by the rules to say things that you know are minimally effective. Let's just call it that way. Minimally effective. When the real issues are getting inside and finding God who's at inside his temple, which is where he said he would be, and it ain't in some place in Rome, it's right in this chair is where God's temple is, or your chair, or your
temple is.
And that's where church takes place. So I can't tell you how excited I am about what's ahead. And at the same token, when I tell you I don't know what I'm doing, I'm scared to death.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, I trust that I'm being led literally by angels. I can prove to myself that I'm surrounded by angels. Mm-hmm. So I have a sense that I'm going to be given the guidance that I need. But when I look out and say, come on, man, you're trying to change the world. And the answer is, well, I think maybe I am.
So who's invited to this summit, and how are they being connected to it?
Well, this organization in Canada, which is ICR, it's a Canadian organization. They have their own network. They sponsor this. They bring in their own people. And I came because I volunteered to be part of it if they wanted me. And they said, yes, but I think I'm probably the only American on the docket. And so it's going to be a 1 o'clock Eastern time.
I have the thing that I have, Chuck, is that I so agree with what you're doing and the idea that there is that this is a time. It feels like it. It feels like it to me that there is, I mean, how would we know? I don't know how the chimpanzees and the bonobos, how that evolutionary push, what was that? But it was built in there, that it was built in for Homo habilis and then going up to Cro-Magnon to Homo sapiens. It was built in. There is an evolutionary push that is built into the system. And what I hear you saying is that you're going to that system, that place where the evolutionary push resides, and allowing it to express itself into the next level of consciousness.
Yes, exactly. And you gave the names of some of our ancestors with their names, you know, the whoever. But the name that seems to be going to be chosen for the newly evolved human is Homo Luminus, the man of light. And that's the light that we're going to see, the light that guides us, the light that's in us. That's, I think, and that's what's coming from the Andes. The native people in the Andes are saying that's the title, that we're going to be the man of light. Well, that means that we're headed toward a spiritual evolution that will manifest itself on how we deal with each other. And I think that's why the problem with our present leadership in the United States is that it just goes like this. It just feels terrible. How can't we get along? And the answer is, if you have had the experience of seeing some of the light and dealing with it and being surrounded by angels, none of that stuff even works.
So enough of the people, Chuck, then, the people who will join you are people who have gone to experience the light, the purest and in the greatest degree that they could, and they're coming back to share about that experience and how the rest of us can have that, not only have that experience, but the value of it going toward it.
Yes, and I think what's going to happen, starting with what we're doing right today, is that somewhere on our webpage, which is still in the state of development, but it's called the Kundalini Research Foundation.org. If you look at it, it'll get, your computer will find it. But if you, what we're doing is going to be giving people, like, I guess we'll put this on there also, but then we'll be interviewing other people, because Clay is going to help us set that up. Mm-hmm. And we'll have our own podcast about this with people we can find. And I think that's such a great idea that came through this morning. So even though I have a sense that I don't know what I'm doing and that I'm just, you know, as they say in Texas, batshit crazy. I know that all I have to do is just keep following where I'm land, and it'll go where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
At least that's what's happened so far in my life.
Well, it's happened in every great story that I've seen. I mean, or I heard about, those of us that know about Mary Baker Eddy, she was in her 50s in Kansas, a divorced woman in the 1800s and hadn't done anything, ends up founding one of the great religions of the world, Christian Science, one of the great newspapers of the world before she's 80. This is back in a time when there was barely telegraph. That we just, so the idea of that we need to know everything other than we are guided toward, and we can move toward this light. There is a light within me. And I know that when I can actually feel it, I'm getting more sensitive to it in my 70s, that I know when I am moving a direction toward the light. I also know when I'm stepping a direction back from the light. There's an actual physical manifestation that I can feel when I am working toward compassion, as I'm working, stepping away from compassion for myself. And that's how I then express it to the world.
Yep. And I think, Dennis, that staying on that level, the word, what you all are doing is incredible. Compassion, in search of the compassionate male. What a great title. What a great thing about. Yeah, and so who would not want to be known as a compassionate male?
Right.
Well, there are several people that couldn't be, could never be like that, and one of them is the President of the United States.
As far as we know. And
as far as we know
today, because this is one of the things that I want to say, is that how can we then express, because what I found is that what my prayer work and what I'm doing is that my exterior judgments are a call to something inside of me that needs healing. Like, for example, Clay and I were talking about this earlier this morning. Mm-hmm. I don't have any judgments about Charles Manson. He doesn't at all tingle anything within me. I'm just glad that he's in a place where he's not going to be doing any harm to anyone else in this, but he doesn't need one more brick of my judgment on top of him.
Right.
So I've apparently healed my mass murderer and messianic mass murderer inside of me. That part of me apparently is healed because he doesn't trigger me.
Yep.
Now the President of the United States triggers me.
You bet.
He triggers me. So what that says to me, Chuck, is what is it inside of me that is calling to be healed? What is it? And certainly I want to know what I want to vote, and I know what I'm going to be an activist, and I'm going to do what I can. But the real work is that there's something inside of me that is calling to be healed, or he wouldn't trigger me as much as he would emotionally. I'm talking about upsetting me as far as that. So what does it say about me? And I'm working on me on that. And that's where I see your light and the Kundalini and the it is such a value to my practice.
Well, I think I may be going through the healing process on that. I'll just tell you this because it's funny as hell to me. This past week, when I've listened to all this craziness that's going on, It's just got worse and worse and worse. And somebody, I've forgotten who, said there are two quotes from Gopi Krishna, Yogi Berra, that are instructive for where we are right now. The first quote is, you can observe a lot by watching. And the second one is, the future ain't what it used to be. But when I heard that, when I heard that first one, I realized that the secret to getting through all this right now is just simply to observe and be a conscious observer.
Exactly.
And not let it be anything more than being observer.
Oh, beautiful.
You learn a lot by watching.
And then it comes to another Yogi Berra quote, which is your following. When you come to a fork in the road, take it.
It's amazing.
Which is what you're doing.
Of course.
Which is what you're doing. You're...
Yeah. It's, it's pretty interesting where we are and how we're going to resolve it. There's a possibility that we could be headed towards something, but I don't think so. I don't think. This is a theological statement,
mm-hmm.
but I think the founding of this country, as many glitches as we see in it, you know, George Washington was a slave owner. Well, that was, what does that mean? Well, then it didn't mean anything. Today it means that, well, that was just part of the situation. But the point I'm trying to make is I think that this country was set aside to have a global leadership in leading us to this next step of evolution.
Mm.
And if we blow it, then it'll go someplace else. But we're not ready to blow it, that's for sure. And so I'm a Boy Scout. I can't deal with the idea that we're going to fail in this. We are not going to fail.
Yeah. Failure is not an option,
yeah.
As Gene Cernan told us on Apollo 13. You know, it's just not. You just get you go and you dump all the stuff out on the table and you get the duct tape out and you figure it damn out. You just do it because that's what we do. And there is a well of goodwill, I believe, in our country and in around the world that is being tapped. Thank you. There it is. There
it is. I keep it by my desk, my duct tape.
And that's why I wanted to meet you today, Chuck, is because I wanted to see, I wanted to experience you in real time at a time when you're going through your evolutionary times and you're going through doing what it is to bring your light to the planet with all the questions, with all the directions on where you're going to go, but with your firm resolve to know that there is this light and we are all going to walk toward it together, hand in hand.
Yeah. Even the ones that don't want to.
You can't do it. I mean, that's, I don't know. Have you ever been a 12-year-old kid laying in his bed trying to go, I didn't do my homework and please stop Monday morning from coming. Please stop Monday morning. What? It never did. And never this worked. Is coming. This
I have that problem every day as it is right now.
This is coming. It is a reckoning, I feel. And Chuck, Clay, you and I have talked about this right. So often is that we're going through a healing right now. And as any of us who've ever had an injury knows, that when you go through a healing, there's going to be some pain as we go through this healing. There's going to be some cleansing of the wounds. There's going to be some necessary excision that needs to be done in order to get to the places that need to be cleansed.
Yes.
But the natural healing process is there, and we're willing to do the work. to be able to expose the wound to the sunlight and be able to allow it to begin to heal.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be the agenda for the next foreseeable period of time, is the healing of the wounds and opening up the curtain so we can see the light.
Yes.
Because the only reason we don't see the light is because we don't want to. You know, wait a minute. If I have to see that light, I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. So forget that. I'm going the other direction. That's kind of the feeling that I have sometimes, and I'm sure most people have.
Certainly.
If anything's going to prohibit me from doing what I want to do, I don't want to pay attention to it.
Exactly.
Wow. What an exciting time. What an exciting time we're headed into.
I think so.
You know, it feels like that this is the, because we're in this particular phase and we're still sometimes behaving. I remember when I was growing up, I had this aversion. I didn't understand the value of hard work. I didn't understand the value of spending extra time of taking care, because I didn't understand it, because I was only looking for that instantaneous gratification.
Right.
We're getting to that point where we're getting mature enough, where we have enough people that understand that it's going to take work. It's going to take time, and it's going to take us doing this together in order to collaborate to get to the future that we want to have.
Yeah. As long as we make it by next Tuesday, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. what did Carrie Fisher say? She was talking about instantaneous gratification takes too long. That's me. So that's why I needed to talk with you today, Chuck, to remind me of that there is this light, that it is there. And we're reminded, which means I knew at one time.
Yeah.
I've never had a spiritual truth, not in A Course in Miracles, not in the Bible, not in any piece of writing, autobiography of a yogi, anything that I've ever read, that I haven't gone and said, I knew that. Yeah.
I knew that all along. Yep.
It's exactly. It's always a reminding.
Yeah, I started the Course in Miracles on the 6th of May of 1978, quite by accident.
That was early.
Yeah, and it was quite by accident. It was just literally thrust upon me. And it was on a Sunday, and I was at a retreat, and a guy had been telling me for months, I've got something you got to read. And I thought, oh, that's going to be more of that bullshit. And so
me too. I did the same thing. Yeah, prestidigitation, big deal.
I was on a church retreat with a church that I wasn't really involved with. I just was a guest. And somehow or another, there was an emergency telephone call. And whoever took it took the message from my sister that my mother was in a hospital and she'd have a complication for a scan they'd done on her brain. And the complication was that if it didn't resolve itself in 72 hours, she was going to be a vegetable for the rest of her life.
Oh, my.
That's something none of us wanted to hear. So I'm sitting down at a picnic table by the window, the river, when they come to me with this message. And I look over, and here's this set of books that this guy insists that I read. And I've had all these psychic experiences all that spring, 1978, the spring of, it was just amazing. So I looked at it and I said, well, here's a teacher manual. Let's see what it says about psychic experiences. And sure enough, I turned it and there was a chapter on Are Psychic Experiences Real? That was the title. And it said, of course psychic experiences are real. You wouldn't have gotten that. I'd expect God to communicate on the only one channel that we all understand. And I was gone. The next day I went to New York and I went to Bob Scutch's office, apartment on 59th Street, and they let me in, and this girl opens the door and she says, I'm Marianne Williamson, what can I help you with? And she said, I said, I want the book. She said, fine, we got the books. And that was 1978. What I did, I decided right then just like I did with Gopi Krishna. Right then I decided that I would do that exactly as it said to do it every day for 365 days. And along the way, Dennis, I had the same experience you did. I'd read things and I'd say, well, hell, I could have written that. Yep. You know, and it's not because I'm a great writer. It's just the memory, the racial memory is all inside there. Of all of us. It's in the temple.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, exactly. It is all there.
Yeah. And because of that, I think that our ability to remember and remind each other of that is really good news. You know, we're not lost on a desert island someplace. We're lost in the middle of a crowd of people that are also lost, and all of us have the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly.
Or I can't remember his name right now, but one of the great novelists of the last century wrote a book called Let Me Count the Ways. And it was about a discussion of the Vietnam War and why we were there. It mm-hmm. takes place in Chicago. And the end of the book, the hero is riding in a cab down Michigan Avenue, talking with the cabbie about why we're in Vietnam. And finally, the cabbie says, well, if you want to know my answer to it, I can give it to you in a nutshell. The universe is like a giant safe. And the problem is the combination is locked up inside. And that's true. It's all right here.
Yeah.
It's all here. Right here. And you know, and the interesting thing about it, the safe metaphor, Chuck, is that whether you're seven entire numbers off or one tiny click away from that, it's still locked.
Yeah.
So it's continuing to trust that we're moving the tumbler, and that's where that intuition, that little bit, those angels that just give you a direction to go, let's have this Kundalini, let me be part of this Kundalini summit. Let me be part of it, even though I don't know. Let me start the foundation, yes, even though I don't know how it is. Let me know that whispering that has gotten you to do this has been so profound.
Let me footnote that for you, Dennis. At 11 o'clock this morning, something said to me, call Clay. I haven't talked to Clay for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. He's been busy. I've been busy. We can't get out of our houses. We're just a bunch of old guys locked up at home. But I called him, and all of a sudden, things started to just go wildfire. And here, 2 hours later, I'm on this program with you, and yes, the timing, the timeliness of it is unbelievable.
Yep.
Because
divine order. It's divine order.
It is divine order.
And exactly.
I'm learning, and I'm starting to get good at it, to trust that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I trust that. And boy, it's so much easier.
And isn't it amazing? This is the thing about me, Chuck, is that something like this will happen to me 1,000 times in a row. And I will doubt that it happened. It's going to happen that 1,001th time. Yeah. I mean, that to me is the hilarity of this experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. That's it in a nutshell. And it's always there. One of the things I do, Dennis, and this is just where I am, but I talk to my angels all the time. I know they're there. Somebody a long time ago, some seer or somebody says, yes, one of your angels is an 8-year-old boy that's named Peter. Well, I think there's an 8-year-old boy out there kind of on my case. And I talk to him, and then there's also an older man with a beard that's on my case. And I talk to him, but I've been asking, what's your name? And I don't have that yet. The point is, I'm in communication with how I envision the embodiment. Exactly. My spiritual guidance.
And you know, I'll say this. I'm sorry. I don't mean to dominate that. This and this.
Please do.
But I will say this, just Chuck, is that the WGN, that Clear Channel radio mm-hmm. station, does not care whether I have my radio receiver on or not.
They're still broadcasting.
These things are still being broadcast whether I'm tuning into them or not. It's that you're tuning into yours and I'm tuning into mine, and Clay, you're tuning into yours. Each one of us has our own custom made set and our own custom made way of hearing the channels that come, that are here coming through. And we are seeing this scientifically.
Yes, exactly. And I know Clay has done this, and I'm assuming you probably did too, Dennis, but I can assure you, I spent a better part of my life trying to conform to all the right answers.
Yeah, almost killed me.
Yeah, well, almost killed me too, actually, Clay. Mm-hmm. And because those aren't the right answers. The answers are right here. Mm-hmm. Here inside the temple.
They're already here.
Yeah.
Chuck, is there anything in the last couple of minutes that we need to say that we have not said?
Well, I just pay attention to the fact that you can observe a lot just by watching.
Thank you. Chuck, thank you so much for this time today. Have a wonderful and wonderful session. And all of this will be on the website, Clay, right?
That's right. I'm going to work on it tonight, and it'll be up before the morning.
Bless your heart.
All right. Well, thank you, Chuck.
It's a real pleasure.
Thank you, Clay. And this is Dennis Tardon, and we'll see you on the next episode of In Search of the New Compassionate Male.
Wow.